I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the clerk please call the roll?
Ms. Crane?
Here.
Mr. Jones?
Here.
Ms. Bodaszewski?
Here.
Mr. Keel?
Here.
Mr. Nankervis?
Here.
Ms. Troll?
Here.
Ms. White?
Here.
Mayor Becker?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. This is the fun part of the night, where we get to recognize people who deserve to be recognized. And the first person is Ed Mercer, who's going to present the award to Kim Horn.
Yep.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'd like to take a moment of your time to acknowledge Officer Kim Horn for her many years of service to the community of Juneau. Officer Horn started her career with the Juneau Police Department in 1984. And in 1993, she became a community service officer, and shortly after that, in 1997, a police officer. Officer Horn has had several different positions within the organization, as well as duties. She was a crisis negotiator. She was a school resource officer. She was a field training officer. And her last detail was working in the criminal investigation unit as a detective. My observations of Kim, of working with Kim over the years, I have personally observed her dedication and hard work, her willingness to give out her very best to the public, and her approachable demeanor has made her a very successful police officer. Although I'm going to be sad to see Kim retire, I'm excited about the next chapter in her life. And we're going to truly miss Kim. So, as a symbol of our appreciation, Kim, the Juneau Police Department would like to present you with this shadow box for your 30 plus years of public service to the community of Juneau. Thank you.
I just have a couple words I'd like to say, too, to Kim. I've known Kim for the whole time. She's been at JPD. And there's very few of us that can say that have worked for the city for 30 years. I think it must be a Kim thing. So since JPD had a new system put in place in 1999, Kim has responded to 3,760 calls.
Wow.
She's worked on 1,424 cases. She's written 732 citations, and she's arrested 168 people. She does her job well. She's appreciated by everybody at JPD and in the community, and we will miss you. And I will call you on day 3 to find out what retirement's all about. Unlike JPD, we just have a little pin for you, and it's your 30-year pin from CBJ. Thanks.
So if I could just say a couple of words real quick. This is Chris Sell. And
we really appreciate it.
18 years, 5 months, and 5 days ago, and I stood right here. I think it was the same carpet. And we pinned on badges for the Juneau Police Department. And we've been through a lot since then. We were a lot younger and probably a lot faster. But there's still no one I'd rather go through the door with. Because Kim, I've come to find, is the toughest and the nicest person I know. She's a little like Mother Teresa, if Mother Teresa was really good with the shotgun. She is. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. The next item on our agenda is the mayoral proclamation for Jamie Parsons. This has already been sent to Mary Beth Parsons, his wife, and I just wanted you to hear it. Whereas Jamie Parsons moved to Juneau in 1972 to become the city's first Parks and Recreation Director, and whereas he served on the City and Borough of Juneau Assembly from 1981 to 1989, and whereas Jamie was mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau from 1991 to 1994, and whereas instead of running for a second mayoral term, in 1994 he threw himself into fighting a proposal to move Alaska's capital to Wasilla, and whereas Jamie was named Juneau's Citizen of the Year in 1994, and whereas his idea led to the advent of Gavel Alaska's coverage of the Alaska legislature, and whereas Jamie served as a Glacier Valley Rotarian, chair of the Alaska Committee, and CEO of the Juneau Chamber of Commerce, and whereas he was tireless and a tireless advocate for Juneau, and also known for his sense of humor, optimism, and love of sports, and whereas Jamie passed away on December 26, 2015, in Mercer Island, Washington, surrounded by his family. Now, therefore, I, Mary Becker, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby recognize and honor Jamie Parsons for his unending dedication to the betterment of Alaska and all of its citizens. In witness whereof, I have hereto set my hand and cause the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, to be affixed this 30th day of December 2015. Thank you. The next proclamation is in honor of the National Mentoring Month. Whereas studies have shown that young people who receive guidance and support from a caring adult are less likely to resort to violence, abuse drugs or alcohol, and drop out of school, yet are more inclined to make positive choices, fulfill their potential, and go on to higher educational studies. And whereas Big Brothers Big Sisters is one of the oldest and most successful youth mentoring programs in the nation, originally organized in 1904, and chartered by the United States Congress in 1958. And whereas in Juneau, Big Brothers Big Sisters of Alaska has been matching local children facing adversity with caring adult mentors since 1979, offering a variety of mentoring programs, including a community-based program, a school-based program, and a program at the Johnson Youth Center. And whereas Big Brothers Big Sisters in Juneau is supported by individual and corporate donations, grants from foundations and governmental agencies, serving over 100 children in 2015, and whereas a national coalition of mentoring programs has created National Mentoring Month as a means to recruit adult mentors for the estimated 16 million American children who need or want one, and in Juneau, Big Brothers Big Sisters provides the opportunity for adults to mentor children. And whereas this month provides an opportunity to thank current and past volunteer mentors for their dedication in making a difference in a child's life, and for others to consider the benefits of mentoring. Now, therefore, I, Mary Becker, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby proclaim January 2016 as National Mentoring Month in Juneau, Alaska, and call upon the people of Juneau to recognize the importance of mentoring, to look for opportunities to serve as mentors in their communities, and to celebrate this month with appropriate activities and programs. In witness whereof, I have hereto set my hand and caused the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau to be affixed this 11th day of January 2016. Is there anyone in the audience who has served as a mentor? Yes, could you stand up and we can just say thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Carl. We could applaud all of you if you just stand up and say, I'm going to. Anyway, thank you. Approval of the minutes, December 14, special assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions? Seeing none, they are approved. December 22, 2015, special assembly meeting. Are there any corrections or additions? Seeing none, they are approved.
Actually, Mary?
Oh, yes, Ms. White, thank you.
Yes, I'm sorry, Mayor Becker. I just thought someone else would have noticed this. In the December 22nd meeting, when we were talking about airport board appointments, that should read through June 30th, 2016, not June 30th.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. White.
I've written those.
With that correction, December 22 is corrected. January 4, special assembly meeting. Are there corrections or additions? Ms. White?
Nope. Didn't find anything on that one.
Thank you. Without objection, they are accepted. Manager's request for agenda changes.
I don't have an agenda change, but I just want to note that on consent agenda 2015-20AB is incorrect. It says 25,000 instead of 35,000. So when it's up for public hearing, we will have a revised copy of that ordinance.
Thank you very much. Public participation on non-agenda items. I have a few people who are signed up to testify tonight on non-agenda items. Ole Olson.
Hello, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Would you give us your name and your address, please?
Yes, my name is Gioli Olson.
Oh, Gioli, I'm sorry.
And I live at 4121 Springway in Juneau, Alaska. And I'm here to voice my support of the Assembly's recommendation of an independent review of the Community Development Department brought up at the last Assembly meeting. Over the last 2 years, I have gained incredible insight of the conditional use permitting process and CDD operations, and I have serious concerns that it is not working. In my particular case, conditions of the permit still have not been met by the applicant, and there is no incentive, time limit, or requirement of the permit holder to meet the conditions specified in the CUP. If conditions are not enforced, they become mere suggestions. According to CDD's website, the administration division provides oversight and administration of all CDD activities, one of which is a code enforcement, specified as inspection and enforcement actions to assure compliance with building code, land use code, and public nuisance codes. I believe CDD's current lack of oversight and enforcement invalidates the whole conditional use permitting process. It is CDD's responsibility to ensure that all conditions of the permit are met prior to allowing the permittee to conduct business, and this is not currently being done. In the near future, the city will be permitting marijuana establishments under the conditional use permitting process. It is in everyone's best interest that CDD is up to task, number one, providing objective, accurate, and thorough reports to the Planning Commission, not simply echoing the statements of the applicant. Number two, verification of compliance of the conditions. And number three, enforcement with consequences for non-compliance, including revocation of the CUP. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Olson. Anthony Zink. Did you put a timer on? Yeah, why don't we do like 4 minutes, maybe?
Hello, my name is Anthony Zink. I live at 11027 Menin All Loop Road. First, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak and be heard, and I'd also like to thank you for acknowledgement that prior information that we presented was heard. Second, I emailed two proposed ordinance changes today, one related to the definition of substantial construction progress, the other related to the provision to afford the legislative body an opportunity to right the wrong of a subordinate agency. In this case, an administrative appeal of a Planning Commission decision when clear and plain language in ordinance is not followed. I'd like to add that the reason for an administrative appeal is for a lead agency, as I said, to right the wrong of a subordinate agency. It is not to adhere to procedures blindly or to adopt language that backs the hearing officer and or the appeal agency into a corner so that the subordinate agency can make arbitrary decisions without taking responsibility for those decisions. And I think that's the crux of the matter. When the Planning Commission can hide behind language in one ordinance, it does a disservice for the entire community. I would be willing to work with any member to improve and or justify the ordinance changes that I submitted. And I'd be open to any suggestions or questions.
Thank you.
Like
are there questions for Mr. Zink?
Put in the record?
Certainly. Thank you.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just want to confirm, you did at the beginning say you sent those things you just spoke about, you sent them to us via email today as well?
Yes, I sent them to assembly members.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Are there other questions? Thank you, Mr. Zink. Ruth Baumgartner.
Hi, I'm Ruth Baumgartner, 11027 Mendenhall Loop Road. I just wanted to say thank you for your support, or those members that were supportive last week of an independent review of our issue with the CDD department. Although I've been fighting for our rights, it is not just about us, it's about the process and other members of the community going through the same thing or will be going through the same thing when more cups come through. I believe an independent review of the CDD cup process is necessary and should be conducted and mandated. As Ms. Olson said, as Anthony and I have said, it's us fighting again and again and again for simple things that should have been done from day one, when I have had to fight from day one. When the conditional use was approved, we thought, okay, we walked out the door. We didn't win. We didn't get anything out of it. We thought the conditional use process was a place where things would happen before the person was able to run their business. It didn't happen that way. I fought from day one with this. I'm going to continue to fight until they meet the conditions of the permit. And I don't think anybody else should have to go through the same thing over and over again in this city. It's not fair. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions?
No.
Thank you. Mr. Ken Kelch.
Ken Kelch, 1586 Evergreen Avenue. And I'm speaking about the need of the special election, and I do not believe we need a special election in March. The last time I spoke before the assembly, it was regarding the changing of the senior sales tax exemption. There were comments then from some of the assembly members supporting the changes because the assembly could not afford maintaining the width of exemptions for seniors in tight economic times. Spending $35,000 for a special election with only one ballot measure on it, instead of waiting until the regular general election in October, does not keep the faith with seniors who were told they should be paying more taxes because CBJ cannot afford future budgets. We do not need the special election. There are two other reasons why I disagree with calling the special election. The first is the haste it was done in. The District 1 assembly seat that was vacated when Mary Becker became acting mayor and for which you conducted interviews tonight should have been filled first. The assembly should have been made whole with 9 members first, then a discussion of a special election. Would it have made a difference? I don't think it probably would have. But an Assembly District 1 seat did not have voice or vote in that decision. That is flat wrong. Again, the District 1 Assembly seat should have been filled and the Assembly made whole before a major decision made like calling a special election was done. What is the haste? We do not need a special election. Lastly, I enjoyed serving 2 years as Deputy Mayor with Mayor Sally Smith. The deputy mayor's position is oftentimes used to bridge and balance different philosophies and factions of the assembly. While the mayor appoints the position, the assembly as a whole must approve the position. Mayor Fisk must have had confidence in Mayor Becker's ability when he reappointed her deputy commissioner and the assembly agreed. Jesse Keel is now deputy mayor. It appears that politically and philosophically, there's a balance between the mayor and the deputy mayor positions. We do not need a special election. Right now, we need stability and balance. I would ask the assembly to reconsider and allow the mayor's election to be held at the regular time in October. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Kelch? Thank you.
Thank you.
Public participation. Is there anyone else who wished they had signed up but didn't? Okay, public participation is closed. We're on to the consent agenda. Mr. Keel. Is there anyone in the public who would like to change or withdraw, or not change, but remove something from the consent agenda for further discussion other than an ordinance for introduction? Anyone in the assembly? Okay, Mr. Keel, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move adoption of the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? No. The consent agenda is approved. So we're on to public hearing. Madam Clerk, would you read the title of the first ordinance?
Ordinance 2015-48, an ordinance amending the revenue and taxation code relating to same-sex domestic partnerships.
Madam Manager, staff report.
The CBJ currently extends certain tax benefits to same-sex domestic partners. Doing so is predicated upon the fact that same-sex partners could not legally marry. Given the change in the law and in order to treat all domestic partners equally, this ordinance would amend the code to delete the references to same-sex domestic partners. Tax benefits would continue to be extended to spouses of eligible taxpayers. This ordinance was considered by the Assembly at the Finance Committee on December 16, 2015. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this ordinance? Okay. Assembly action. Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2015-48 and ask for unanimous consent.
Are there any objections? Okay. Ordinance 2015-848 has passed. Next ordinance, Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 1550, an ordinance amending the penal code relating to criminal mischief.
Madam Manager.
This ordinance would amend the penal code by adding a definition of property of another consistent with Alaska state law. The addition of this definition would clarify that a person commits the crime of criminal mischief if the person damages the property of another, regardless of whether that violator also has an interest in the property. The idea that a co-owner can lawfully damage property where all other elements of the criminal mischief offenses are satisfied was specifically rejected by the Alaska Supreme Court. This ordinance clarifies the CBJ criminal offense ordinance is intended to be consistent with the state law. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this ordinance? Assembly action. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would move ordinance 2015-50 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay. 2015-50 has passed. Madam Clerk.
Ordinance 2015-51B, an ordinance amending the personnel management code relating to partially exempt and exempt service classifications.
Madam Manager.
This ordinance would amend the personnel management code relating to the classification of exempt and partially exempt employees. The amendment would clarify the exemption status of the city manager, the city attorney, the Bartlett Regional Hospital Chief Executive Officer, the Bartlett Regional Hospital Chief Financial Officer, and licensed medical staff credentialed by and working at Bartlett Regional Hospital. Version B of this ordinance removes the Bartlett Regional Hospital Chief Behavioral Health Officer from the exemption classification and better defines the medical staff to whom the ordinance applies. The Version B amendments are indicated in italics. The Bartlett Regional Hospital Board of Directors have reviewed and approved these changes. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this ordinance? Assembly action. Ms. Crane?
I move adoption of ordinance 2015-51B and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Okay. Ordinance 2015-51B passed. The next ordinance, Madam Mayor. Yes.
Just for the record, at least in my book, I only have 2015-51. I do not have version B. And version B is not listed online. It's also listed as 2015-51. So I hope I voted on the right ordinance.
Madam Manager.
One moment, please.
I have B in my book, so I don't know.
No, I have B in my book.
Oh, no, just, yeah.
I don't have B in my book.
No, you're right. I'm looking at the wrong place. Yes.
Just these two pieces. This comes out.
It's a way, just a phrase that you put in the manager's report.
Okay, so clarification on what's 2015-51 on page 2 of 3. Line 20, that's E, Bartlett Regional Hospital's Chief Behavioral Health Officer, is removed. As outlined in the manager's report, and the licensed medical staff credentialed by and working at Bartlett Regional Hospital moves up to E, and F is deleted. I'm sorry that you didn't have the updated ordinance in your packet.
It's also not posted online for the public either.
Madam Mayor?
Yes,
just as clarification, so all you did was delete the old E, right?
Correct. And added new language for what is the current F and moved it up.
Okay, then that's, so what's the, so the current new language for F?
Is and licensed medical staff credentialed by and working at Bartlett Regional Hospital.
Is there any further objection or is there anything you would like us to do differently than voting on this that we already
have? I guess the question's to the attorney. I mean, we voted on unanimous consent on an ordinance that's not before us. We've just gotten a verbal update after the vote. What we voted on was not the version the city manager just gave us, in my interpretation, and maybe the law department's got a different answer. Okay.
Madam Attorney, do you have a response to that?
What was voted on, the motion was to adopt 2015-51B.
And there was no B in the
package. Which is not before us.
Which is not, well, the, it's the correct statement, but it wasn't in the packet. But that is the motion that was adopted.
Mr. Dan Curvis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move for reconsideration.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, will you read the title of the ordinance and then we'll...
We have to...
Oh, that's right. We have to find out if you want to reconsider. Sorry. Okay. Is everyone okay to reconsider? Now we can go ahead. Thank you. Well, it's ordinance 2015-51B that is different.
Madam Mayor?
Back before the assembly. Mr. Jones?
If 20, whatever this ordinance is, 2015-51 is now back before us. I would move we table this until we have a version in writing that is what the manager would like us to approve.
You've heard the motion. Is there objection to that?
Okay. Question?
Yes.
If I might. Are there any consequences in terms of the timeliness of this?
If it wasn't, there's no on the timeliness. It does. It's a, what's been described to me as a housekeeping measure that gets us in line with current practice. But if it has not been posted, then we do need to post it before it's formally adopted.
Okay.
So even if there were consequences, we do need to post it, the correct version.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Is there objection? Okay. Thank you. Madam Clerk, would you read the title of Ordinance 2015-52?
An ordinance amending Ordinance 2008-08, authorizing the Port Director to execute an amendment to the 2008 Ock Bay Boatyard Lease Agreement.
Madam Manager?
After obtaining the final permits for a new boatyard at the Ock Bay Loading Facility in July 2015, Docks and Harbors renewed its proposal to the Ock Bay Boatyard lessee, Harry's Plumbing and Heating, to relocate boatyard operations from Don's Stadter Harbor Facility to the Ock Bay Loading Facility. An appraisal conducted in August 2015 established the fair market rent of the proposed Ock Bay Loading Facility boatyard lease premises to be $27,000 per year. The parties then negotiated a lease amendment as allowed under the 2008 lease for Harry's Commercial Marina to occupy the Ock Bay Loading Facility for $27,000 per year. The Docks and Harbors Board recommended the proposed lease amendment at its October regular board meeting, and the Assembly Lands Committee recommended approval of the lease amendment at its November 23, 2015 meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this ordinance? Okay. Assembly action. Mr. Dan Curvis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2015-52 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? Okay. 2015-52 passes. Madam Clerk, Ordinance 2015-20Y.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $24,423 as funding for the Juneau International Airport Runway Rehabilitation Capital Improvement Project, funding provided by the Alaska Department of Transportation.
Thank you, Madam Manager.
The Federal Aviation Administration funds 93.75% of the project, with the remaining being split between the Alaska Department of Transportation and the Juneau International Airport. FAA and JIA funds had previously been appropriated. The Airport Board approved this action in its August 12, 2015 meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this ordinance? Assembly action. Yes, Ms. Smith. Ms. White.
Wasn't sure there. I move that we adopt ordinance 2015-20Y and ask for unanimous consent.
Okay. Is there objection? Okay. 2015-20Y is accepted. The next ordinance, 215-20Z, Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $1,800,000 as funding for the Juneau Housing First Collaborative Capital Project, funding provided by the General Fund's fund balance.
Madam Manager.
Juneau Housing First Collaborative requests CBJ provide $1.8 million in bridge funding for construction of the Housing First facility, which could become a permanent increase in funding provided by the CBJ to the JHFC project. JHFC has identified committed and potential funding sources for the $7.5 million capital project to build an approximately 16,000 square foot facility, initial phase of potential larger building. Restricted conditions from a large committed grantor, the HFC SNUG program, and project developer Tlingit-Haida Regional Housing Authority require total funding to be committed prior to using their resources for project construction. JHFC states that there are significant benefits to beginning the construction project immediately. The current project cost estimate is $7.2 million with $6.5 million construction contract. To meet restrictions, funding commitments must total $6.5 million. To date, JHFC has committed funding of $4.7 million, 1.8 short of the construction contract amount. They are in varying stages of the funding request process, and with six additional grantors funded to secure an additional $3.2 million of funding. Total committed and potential funding is $7.9 million. In January 2015, the Assembly adopted Resolution 2708 in support of the JHFC mission, recognizing the public purpose of the project and community need. The resolution also committed 1.5 of CBJ funding for the project. In March 2015, the Assembly Finance Committee adopted the plan for funding the $1.5 million. The JHFC organization does not have sufficient financial resources or credit rating to support a standard loan agreement. The project participation restrictions referred to above require unconditional loan funding. Unconditional means the loan funds would be a grant if sufficient alternate fund is not obtained. The Assembly directed the commitment of $1.8 million of additional funding. It is the intent of the Assembly that after any additional CBJ funding provided by this ordinance be spent only after the current committed funding of $4.7 million is spent, and that the amount of additional CBJ funding provided be immediately reduced by the amount of any grant funding secured by the JHFC for the project. The Assembly Finance Committee approved this action at its December 16, 2015 meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the public who would like to testify on this ordinance? Assembly action. Ms. Crane.
I move adoption of ordinance 2015-20Z and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there objection? 2015-20Z has been approved. We're at unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business?
No, thank you.
Thank you. We're on new business, and the first item is the bidding review board recommendation, E15-237 Cope Park Phase 2 improvements. Madam Manager.
In your packet is my memo with my recommendation, which I assume all of you have read, and so I'll just highlight my final recommendation. It's my recommendation that Assembly uphold the purchasing officer's decision finding Glacier State to be the low bidder and award the contract accordingly. My recommendation is based on my finding that, number one, despite the fact that all of the interested parties agreed Rule 14 applied, the Bid Review Board did not consider the plain language of the rule in making its recommendation. And number two, the Bid Review Board did not address the appropriate standard of review and made no finding that the purchasing officer's decision was unreasonable, arbitrary, or capricious. I recommend award to Glacier State to be the low bidder.
Did you say the purchasing officer award?
Upholding the purchasing officer's decision.
We have two people who are signed up to testify on this one, Andrew Campbell.
My name is Andrew Campbell. I live at 4420 North Douglas Highway, and I'm here to represent Admiralty Construction. I brought forward this bid protest and had gone through a long process that included the Bidding Review Board, and they recommended that the project be awarded to Admiralty Construction. The manager has recommended against that, and I disagree with the recommendation for a couple reasons. Regarding the first one, that Rule 14 was not considered, I have carefully read the Bidding Review Board's recommendation. At several locations in their recommendation, they refer to Part 14. They talk about how important it is that it be considered and how that is basically the crux of the matter. And I think that their recommendation clearly and plainly discusses in great detail Rule 14 and the way they viewed it and how they used that for their recommendation. Rule 14 applies to how bid discrepancies will be resolved, and that was the reason that I protested, that I disagreed with city staff's interpretation of this rule. Regarding the second item that the manager has brought forward, regarding a standard of review, I went back and I reviewed CBJ code regarding the Bidding Review Board's job, and it is section 53.50.062 parentheses L, and it regards Bidding Review Board's recommendation, and it reads, the Bidding Review Board's recommendation shall be based on the provisions of this code, interpreted in light of applicable state case law and generally accepted principles of government purchasing as set forth in standard treatises, decisions of the United States Comptroller General, and similar authorities. The recommendation shall contain findings of fact and conclusions of law. I was not able to find anywhere in there that discussed the standard of review that the manager has mentioned, and I believe that the Bidding Review Board has done a very careful, thorough review of this matter, and that their findings accomplish what they're directed to do by CBJ code. They have based their findings on fact and conclusions of law. The Bidding Review Board did their job, I believe, and they deliberated for over 30 days on this matter. They've issued a very well-written finding that thoroughly discusses the matter. One of the things that's come forward recently is that Glacier State was not given the opportunity to participate in the process, and I believe that is not the case. At the hearing, Glacier State was given the same amount of time to present their case that Admiralty was, 30 minutes, and Mr. Sheldon Winters, their attorney, and Mr. Mason both spoke. They used almost all of that 30 minutes of time to present their case, and I think that their point of view was considered. I think that the Bidding Review Board agreed with my interpretation of the specifications, and that's really what this matter comes down to, is interpretation of the specifications, and I believe that the sanctity of the bidding process is in question here, and that careful interpretation of the specifications and uniform enforcement of those specifications is very important. And lastly, I'm a little bit confused by the manager's recommendation. I was under the impression that the Bidding Review Board process carried up some weight and that it would be valued as we move forward. And I'm just questioning, why do we have the Bidding Review Board process if their views don't carry support? Thank you for the opportunity to speak, and I'm ready for any questions anyone might have.
Thank you. Thank you. Other questions? Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jim Mason.
My name is James Mason. I live at 10481 Ann Coleman Road. And I'm here on behalf of Glacier State Contractors, the low bidder for the project of Cote Park. It's been a long process. The project was bid back in October. There was a small mistake in the column that was extended by the gal that works for me. And anyway, the bid was still the lowest bid. It contained all the information necessary to apply Rule 14. The bid schedule was a little bit different than other bids at times, but obviously all the bidders kept the same format, and the unit price has always prevailed, whether it's a column that says unit price. And it has to do with it. As far as that, it's usually a simple situation. This has gotten more complex over the time. The bidding review committee reviewed everything, and we were able to speak, but we weren't prepared for any defense. We didn't know the whole issues. We spoke first, and basically, Admiralty Construction was the one who filed the protest, so they were able to give comments and then they were able to rebuttal. Now that this is down to an assembly vote, we're asking for your support. We believe that the recommendation that Rule 14 applied, and it always is applied. I was around when Rule 14 was created many years ago, maybe 25 anyway. I've been a contractor for over 30 in Juneau. And if there's any other questions, I'd be more than happy to answer them at this time. I did have an attorney present. In case there's a presentation, we'd like to do it. If there's any other questions.
Okay, thank you. Are there questions? Thank you very much, Mr. Mason.
Thank you.
Would you like our attorney to speak on this behalf?
I guess if you'd like to, go ahead, Mr. Winters.
I'm here.
I know. We hate you to get out in the rain if you don't say something.
So thank you for the opportunity to speak. Again, I'll just kind of hit on a few points this evening.
Name and address.
Sheldon Winters. I'm a lawyer in town. I'm representing Glacier State Contractors. So, first of all, the bid review board recommendation under your ordinance is exactly that. It's a recommendation. It's not written as a final decision. It must come for you for consideration. And, of course, the question for you is whether you should adopt the bid review board recommendation or the purchasing officer's decision. And we think that that analysis has two factors. And what is really, what is the right decision in this case for the right reason, and we think Ms. Keeper's memo kind of addresses those in general terms. And then secondly, what precedent does the assembly want to set? If it adopts the board review decision, it's going to be adopting those standards that were applied. Now, Mr. Admiralty Construction, Mr. Campbell, believes that Rule 14 was considered, and certainly it was discussed. It was the topic of discussion at the board review board hearing because it was the only issue in the underlying bid protest. But if you look at the board review, the bid review board decision, although they talk about Rule 14 a lot, they reject it, and in their final paragraph, when they apply their final conclusion, they don't address Rule 14 at all. In fact, what they say is, we're denying Mr. Mason's position because, and I'll quote the language, there's not clear and convincing evidence in the bid specification sheet itself as to the intent. That's not Rule 14. That's not even the standard under the law. And so although there was a lot of discussion about Rule 14 because it was the only issue at the hearing, in the recommendation there was a brand new standard applied, and it's there at the bottom of the decision. By all accounts, Glacier State was the lowest bidder. They were the lowest bidder under Rule 14. Alaska Supreme Court law, which wasn't discussed in the bid review decision hearing because, again, all we were talking about was Rule 14. But if Rule 14 is rejected, the Alaska Supreme Court has said clearly, and this was not in the decision, the recommendation, that the lowest bid applies, the lowest number in the bid document applies. So you have Rule 14. You have the rule that the lowest bid applies. You have common sense, and you probably haven't read all the documents under there, but the only number that works for Mr. Mason's bid total to add up is that lower number. It only makes common sense, and that's what the purchasing officer found. Nobody, even today, nobody has said that Mr. Mason intended $150,000. It doesn't make any sense. There's nothing in the record anywhere where anybody says $150,000 was the intent. It was $115,000, and it was a transposing error. Mistakes happen. They happen actually quite frequently in bids. Fortunately, we have a process to work those out so that it's fair to the bidders, and it's fair to the agency, in this case the City and Borough of Juneau, and the taxpayers. And the first thing you look at is there a rule or instruction in the contract, and that's Rule 14. If there's not a rule in the contract, then you follow the law that says the lowest number applies, or lastly, you defer to the logic and common sense of the purchasing officer. So we would suggest that the right reason in this case, the right decision for the right reason, is that Mr. Mason was the low bidder, as he was from the beginning, and that the Assembly ought to consider that adopting the purchasing officer's discretion should be the right one and the precedent that's set. Thank you. And I'm here for questions if you have
any. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
We're back to the Assembly now. You've seen the recommendation of the manager. Are there comments, questions that you have for her, or is there a motion? Yes, Mr. Jones.
Just a couple questions, and maybe this is procedural, but I was just trying to understand, since this is the first time anything's come before me from the bidding review board. As I read the documents, it appeared that at the hearing before the bidding review board, there was one employee of the Department of Law representing the bidding review board and one employee representing the purchasing officer. And so my question is, the actual written order, which starts on page 227 of our packet, who wrote that? And secondly, if the manager's recommendation is that we ignore that particular order because it misstated things, if this was written by a Department of Law employee, it ought to carry a little bit of weight. So I guess I'm trying to figure out who wrote the order.
So the way Jane Stevens assisted the board, but the way she would have taken her direction from the bid review board. So that if she drafted the entire thing or if she drafted pieces of it, I don't know for sure because I am walled off from any of those discussions be available for the Assembly. But when an attorney from the law department assists a board, they're assisting in a procedural manner. They're assisting with the written decision, but they're not providing substantive advice normally. So I can't give you any more information than that. I believe that Ms. Stevens wrote it, but I do want to clarify that it's not an order. This is not a quasi-judicial proceeding. You're sitting in your legislative capacity. This is a recommendation.
Thank you, Paul.
Mr. Jones?
Yeah. You know, I I understand. It says a recommendation of grant protest. It just looks sort of official. And at least a couple of the arguments are pretty legal. Does Rule 14 apply or not? And if the Department of Law helped the Bidding Review Board write an opinion that seemed to be legally wrong, would there be any recommendation from law that they shouldn't do that because it's legally wrong? I mean, that wasn't even mentioned in the dissent that Department of Law said anything about what was written in the order wouldn't stand up legally.
So again, this isn't a, it's not an appeal issue. So
I understand it's not an appeal, but, you know, everything can end up in court. That's all I'm asking. I'm just trying to figure out if we have a recommendation from the city manager to ignore what was written because they didn't apply the rule of law, and it was written by a lawyer who works for us, I'm trying to figure out how that can happen.
I'm trying to figure out a good way to answer your question, and I'm having difficulty finding a good way to answer your question. I can tell you that that I've spoken to Ms. Kiefer about her recommendation, and it's legally sound. The Bid Review Board's decision, they were assisted by an attorney in the office. I'm sure the attorney was not going to let the Bid Review Board do something illegal, but that's not the basis for the manager's recommendation either, that the Bid Review Board did something illegal. Does that help?
Yeah. And it just confirms the joke. You get three lawyers in a room, you get six opinions. So, but other than that, no, I'm still confused, but I think I know the answer.
Ms. Stroll. Thank you, Madam Mayor. So just for my understanding, so we're not in our quasi-judicial role. So therefore, we don't have to pay attention to whether or not the appropriate standard of review, the one that relates to the purchasing officer not acting in an unreasonable, arbitrary, capricious thing. So that's really not at play because we aren't in a quasi-judicial manner.
So let me try to explain it like this. When a bid is protested, the protester files a notice of protest with the purchasing officer setting forth the legal reasons why the protester thinks the award of the bid was in error. The purchasing order issues the first decision on that legal argument, the first response on that legal argument. If the protester does not agree with the purchasing officer's findings, response, then they have the right to bring that to the Bid Review Board. The Bid Review Board then reviews, this is the language from the code, reviews the purchasing officer's response. My understanding is that in this case, the Bid Review Board, there was not much discussion in the decision or in the recommendation about their review of the purchasing officer's decision and the basis for that decision, whether it was supported by a reasonable basis, whether it was arbitrary, and that was the reason why the manager was recommending that the purchasing officer's interpretation of the purchasing office's bid language be upheld. In making this decision, you are correct that you are not bound by the standard of review. However, your decision still has to comport with code, meaning that whoever you decide to award to, the award has to be to the lowest qualified bidder. So the question for you is whether you think the purchasing officer's decision and the actions that were taken complied with code. And if you don't think that's the case, then you should not award in the way that she recommended. It's not a head-to-head argument between the protester and the purchasing officer. It's.
But then, Madam Chair,
yes,
Mayor, no. Just by way of follow-up, then, the review board. It was their responsibility, though, to review the purchasing officer's decision with that standard of review in mind, even though we don't have to trigger it tonight. The review board was supposed to use that standard.
That is my understanding.
Okay. Ms. Craig?
Let's see if I can make this coherent. In the opinion that we were given, the review board cites the U.S. Comptroller General. They cite the matter of Mallory Electric Company, several different cases. But then when you get to the dissent for the dissenting opinion there, the case, it says that the case law relied upon in this recommendation is not relevant. And that's my question. If we adopt the review board's recommendation, are we setting any kind of precedent by from the sites that they suggested there? And really part of my question is, were those items cited, the Comptroller General, et cetera, do you consider that they were relevant to this particular decision?
That last question I can't actually answer because I don't know if the purchasing officer's interpretation of the bid that her office put out was unreasonable. I think that is the question that had to be answered before the bid review board turned to alternative language to determine how calculation errors or transcription errors were supposed to be addressed. But no, the question for you tonight is awarding the bid to the lowest qualified bidder. So no, there would not, you asked whether there would be precedent setting. Yes, there would be, in that you would be defining, setting some legislative precedent for how the purchasing officer's decision, what weight they're given, and whether they're given discretion in other board reviews. I mean, this is a case where it was the purchasing officer's interpretation of the bid document. So was that entitled to deference or not? If you decide no, if you decide the bid review board acted correctly in taking a fresh look at the bid review bid packet and making a decision, then that's the standard that you're going to set. But there won't, because this is not a quasi-judicial appeal, you won't be setting precedent for future bid protests based on the cases that were applied. Except for in the future, I mean, we're going to need to interpret that same bid language. If it continues to be used, we would need to make sure it's interpreted consistently.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I guess my confusion begins at an earlier stage than some of my colleagues here. I don't understand why we're taking bids in pen on paper instead of on Excel sheets with the formula locked, or Google Sheets, or pick your vendor. It that would obviate this whole problem. When you type it in, it does the math. It, especially since it sure looks to me when I come back into some of the supporting documents here in attachments, it somebody data enters this stuff and it ends up in typed form attached to memos. If it's going to end up typed, it is bizarre to me that we're not asking bidders to type it. I mean, we read in the transcripts of the bidding review board hearing that they brought in their Excel sheets they use to prep the bids that they then do in pen and ink. So I will agree with two things in the bidding review board's memo to us. The first is that the CBJ's form bid schedule appears to have created the problem. Because it looks like things got confusing. I'm sure it's the first time that a government form got confusing, but maybe we could we can find a way that it doesn't continue to be. And the second finding that I agree with was where they said that the purchasing officer's inconsistent application of Section 14 to the bid discrepancy between October 5 and October 6 is problematic. Yep. I mean, I agree with that. At one point, looks like the third sentence in Rule 14 was used, and then the later point used all of Rule 14. Seems to me that we need to use the whole rule the whole time, but I kept reading this packet. And then I went back and I reread parts of it, and I kept waiting for the thing that the Bidding Review Board based their decision on. And I never found it. It is clear to me that the purchasing officer has the authority, in fact, the duty, to create policies and procedures like Rule 14, and that the Bidding Review Board is supposed to look at our code first. And our code says those kind of policies and procedures apply. And I think you have to apply the whole rule, not sentences 1 and 3 of a rule. So it's been confusing and undoubtedly frustrating for everybody involved. But I can't find the point where the Bidding Review Board decided that the rules in writing under CBJ code, even if they got applied funny the first time, which stinks, don't end up being the ones we apply. So I don't know, Madam Mayor, if you're ready for a motion. I certainly am ready to support the manager's recommendation and award to Glacier State because it's fewer dollars when you apply the rules of the bid.
Is that a motion?
Yes, Madam Mayor, I so move.
Okay. You've heard the motion. Is there discussion?
I object.
Is objection? Is there discussion? Okay, then will you please call the roll?
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
No.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Ms. White?
Okay, Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Sorry.
That's all right. Did you hear the motion, and are you ready to vote?
I did. I did. I just couldn't unlock my phone in time for the mute button. I voted yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mayor Becker?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Okay, the next item on our agenda is liquor license 586 Coho Bar and Grill mid-cycle protest. Madam Manager.
Yes, the CBJ Finance Department is recommending the Assembly protest the continued operations of Coho's Bar and Grill beverage dispensary tourism liquor license 586 based on unfiled sales tax returns for the fourth quarter of 2014 and the first, second, and third quarters of 2015 and the associated tax penalties and interest owed for those returns. I checked at close of business today and they still had not filed or paid by 4:30 this afternoon. So I recommend the Assembly protest the continuation of Coho's Bar and Grill liquor license due to the unfiled and the associated unpaid sales tax penalties and interest owed.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Yes, Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Human Resources Committee at an earlier meeting tonight also reviewed this and are passing on an amendment or a motion that the Assembly protest the license. At the meeting, the HRC meeting tonight, we were informed that the certified letter which is in your packet, was rejected, but it was also sent regular mail, and that hasn't come back. So they have been notified that we intended to protest this, and so from the HRC, I would make the motion that the Assembly maintain its protest of this liquor license.
Thank you. You've heard the motion. Are there any comments? Is there any objection? Okay, the motion carries and the protest will continue. Staff reports. Are there any staff reports, Madam Manager?
No, thank you.
A mayor report. You heard the proclamation tonight for Jamie Parsons. We sent that to Mary Beth, and we also sent flowers. And I believe there's a card going around, which we will also send when it gets finished. I have not typed up the few changes, but I would just like to announce to you that I've asked Kate Troll to head Lands and Debbie White to join Lands. And then there are some different like things that I opened up. I'm just going to go ahead and Miss White chose a few things, and so she and I'll work out what she really wants to keep and what we'll give to the new person, because right now I needed someone to cover a few meetings that were happening, and she graciously agreed to do that. And so we'll work on, when we have our new person, I'll work on whatever we can give that person. Committee reports. Mr. Keel, Lands, even though Ms. Troll is going to take over from you, you were in charge last time.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Lands Committee last met January 4th. We heard an update from staff on the West Douglas road process and an innovative proposal that the Lands Committee, an innovative proposal for an early subdivision with limited access, and the Lands Committee recommended against moving forward with that proposal. It was, I think, a proactive attempt by staff to deal with end of the road problems of informal dumping and parties that can go on, but the Lands Committee recommended that staff keep looking at alternatives for that problem. We also heard a report from staff on the notion of expanding the Stabler's Point rock quarry, the tremendous amount of rock removed from that quarry for the Stater Harbor expansion is depleting the currently permitted area pretty fast. And so staff had a concept for expanding that area. We'll need to go to the Planning Commission. And it will be, I think, an interesting conversation with the community about some of the noise issues of blasting rock at that quarry. The Lands Committee recommended that staff proceed with a proposal and take it before the Planning Commission. Finally, we also heard an update on the Renninger Drive subdivision there below DZ School with the six lots zoned multifamily. And staff will bring back to a future Lands Committee meeting, chaired by Ms. Droll, two concepts, one for selling those lots by competitive sealed bid and another for a request for proposals process for partnerships, public-private partnerships, or disposals to nonprofits, possibly at less than market value. I think it's fair to say that there are a lot of fascinating ideas out there, more than the city has accessible land. And so the Lands Committee will grapple in future with making a recommendation to the Assembly about the wisest way to move forward. But didn't have one at the last meeting. That concludes my Lands Committee report.
Thank you. Mr. Dan Kervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Public Works and Facility Committee also met on January 4th.
We talked about the Harbor Grant funding, of which we had in our package tonight. We also got the year in review regarding engineering and public works by the ever articulate director, Rory Watt, who's seated in the back. We got an update on the Franklin planning that's going in place right now in the engineering department as well. Michelle Elfers is working on that. We got an update regarding the landfill and an update on the Gastineau demolition. And our next meeting is scheduled for February 1st at noon here in the chambers. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Crane, Finance?
The next Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for February the 10th.
Okay. Ms. Lajewski?
I don't have any committee reports.
That's right.
Liaison reports when you get to that.
I'll come back around.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Human Resources Committee met prior to the assembly meeting tonight. We had a couple orders of business, one of which we dealt with in terms of the liquor license. In addition, we had our Wetlands Review Board annual report that was presented to us. It's also written in and written, and it's in the HRC packet. In addition, there was appointments to the Wetlands Review Board. And the Human Resources Committee is recommending that Hal Geiger, Amy Sumner, and Irene Gallion be appointed to the Wetlands Review Board for terms expiring 12/31/2018.
You've heard the recommendation of Human Resources. Is there objection? Those members are appointed. Thank you.
That's it.
That's it. Okay. Thank you. Let's start back with you, Mr. Jones, and we'll do liaison reports.
Thank you. The DIG meeting, our back meeting every Friday. The Downtown Business Association next meeting is the 28th of January. The Planning Commission is meeting tomorrow night. They have three new members, Nathaniel Dye, Percy Frisbee, and Carl Green. It will be their first meeting. On the agenda is to elect officers, so at the next assembly I can report back who they determine to be their officers. I don't know if they're going to do committee assignments then or whether they'll wait until the next meeting, which is 2 weeks from tomorrow, in terms of liaisons like for lands and those other committees. So that meeting is tomorrow night. The JADC meeting was held on January 6th, Wednesday of last week. One of the orders of business was to elect officers. They had some turnover in their officers. People were termed out. Lauren McVeigh was reelected to be the chair. Rick Caulfield was elected vice chair. Mitch Jackson was elected to be the treasurer, and Susan Murray was elected to be the secretary. They also had asked for an update on our retreat, which I gave. Ms. White was there, and she can add any comments that she wanted. We talked about the retreat, and their basic question was, is there anything in our priorities that sort of changed that they needed to respond to? And basic answer was no, especially related to the Juneau Economic Development Plan. We had approved their scope of work, and my recommendation to them was when they come before the Finance Committee to report on this year's funding and talk about next year's funding, that they have a pretty concise report about what they've been doing this year and what their plans might be for the following year so we can have those kinds of discussions. The Innovation Summit that JADC puts on is going to be held February 8th and 9th here in Juneau. As of the meeting on the 6th, they had 60 persons already registered for that. They have cut off the early registration discount, and there were several members of the board who reported that they were sorry they missed the early discount time. I assume there would be quite a few more people registering for that. And then two other groups that I'm not officially liaison to, but I have been attending, The Aquatics Advisory Board, their next meeting is on the 19th of January. And I haven't attended in a while, but I think some of us have been getting some emails from individuals that are pretty happy with the new rate structure that they were working on. But I'm hoping to get to that meeting to sort of see where they're at on their things. But I do think since that is an empowered board, we need to seriously consider whether we should have a liaison or not.
I did already appoint Debbie because she asked for it.
Okay.
I did send out the request for volunteers, and she volunteered, but if you and she want to fight it out, I don't care which one of you do it.
No, that's fine. I just, I'll let that go. And then today, for about 4.5 hours, I attended the Juneau Commission on Aging retreat. They were trying to look at where they were headed, what they wanted to do. They worked on a mission statement. They worked on some goals, which I won't preempt them. I think in some ways they did a pretty good job on those two aspects. There were some other issues that they had a lot of discussion about. And I suspect that sometime in April, they will probably be bringing a draft of changes they would like to see to their resolution in terms of membership, size, qualifications, as well as some of the duties. They have been looking at the duties that are there versus how they feel they what they could or should be doing. They had a lot of discussion about those, but no consensus among the members today. So I think over the next couple of meetings, they will be discussing those issues and bringing those back to the, I would assume it would start with the Human Resources Committee and go from there. I do know that they specifically are looking forward to the city manager coming to their February meeting. I think their February meeting, I've got something else going on that day, but to talk about sort of their role in terms of the senior economy portion of the of our economic plan that we adopted. And that was touched on a little bit today, but not in very much depth. And I think that's it for my activities today.
Ms. Troll.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Before I get into my liaison reports, if I might just ask a quick question about the Downtown Business Association. They were doing a survey of their members regarding some of our parking problems and looking at different options, the 90 minutes and all those sorts of things. And hoping we're going to get a report back soon, because now is the time for us to begin addressing any parking solutions prior to the summer.
I'm hoping it's on the agenda for the 28th. They have not met since November. With the holidays and with most of the downtown businesses trying to be open as much as possible and to sell to as many of us as we could get downtown, they have not met. So I have not seen a draft of anything either.
But it is on their agenda coming up.
I hope so.
Thank you.
They usually publish the agenda about 8 hours before the meeting, so I can't tell you.
Thank you. My liaison report. Last December, the Tongass Advisory Committee met in Ketchikan and made some last little bit of changes to their recommendations so that it would comport with the Forest Service EIS. The Forest Service has decided that their preferred alternative will be the recommendation of the Tongass Advisory Committee. And so that's what's going on in the EIS. And
what is their recommendation?
Is
that private?
No, it's not private. It's very public. I can share links with you if you would like copies of the report. But basically, the committee did find a way to help speed up the transition to second growth forest, found out a way to kind of encourage co-intent on a lot of the different management designations. We also recognized that it needed to have some change of procedures and attitudes within the Forest Service to make small business sales more friendly and those types of things. So the whole package of our recommendations were accepted by the...
It is online, so I could look it up.
Yeah, and I, you know, I'll make a note to send links. I will be attending a meeting in Ketchikan this January 21st to help finalize some of the implementation mechanisms relative to our recommendations. So it was a good process, came to consensus, and the Forest Service is very appreciative of it. At the last Affordable Housing Commission, they met December 1st. I was not able to attend that meeting, but I did want to share news with you vis-a-vis the Housing Action Plan is on the agenda for tomorrow's meeting of the Affordable Housing Commission. I did get this in my box and quickly looked through it to see that, yes, comments were addressed where before some of those comments hadn't been addressed. The Affordable Housing Commission hasn't made any decision yet on when this goes public. Tomorrow will be their first chance to kind of go through this one more time to make any recommendations and changes. So that's ongoing. The Affordable Housing Commission also discussed the land CIP list, and they passed a motion of support for the land CIP priorities. As you know, they also supported the 5 years on our tax abatement question, which we passed. The other good news is the Volunteers of America. They have received the funding for their second phase of their low-income housing on Douglas. So that is moving along. The Juneau Commission on Sustainability has not met in December. Their annual retreat is coming up. However, they did have a work session or two, and they did provide some comments to the Planning Commission on the CIP process, identifying those projects which enhance energy efficiency and energy conservation, trying to make sure that enters the discussion of selecting our capital improvement priorities. So it was a very informative letter that they put together. And on the JEDC, while I did not make the noon meeting this Wednesday, I did meet with JEDC staff to kind of share some ideas on the Choose Juneau webpage development and try to get them excited and share some fresh ideas. And, you know, so I just kind of took it upon myself to sit down with staff and go through that. And that concludes my liaison reports. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wolosiewski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee met last week on the 5th. I was out of town. I was unable to attend. I can tell you that their agenda included Auk Lake regs, advertising in parks and recs facilities, and the Cax Trail update. And I'll get the minutes and find out what happened. The next meeting is February 2nd. And the LEPC hasn't met since we last met, the Local Emergency Planning Committee, but they're meeting this Wednesday at noon.
Ms. Green.
The December Hospital Board, they spent a considerable amount of time discussing the budget, in particular the impact of the loss of rural demonstration project funds. And then we also got an update on the status of the rural demonstration project, and we're hopeful that in this session of Congress there is some interest in reauthorizing that. Also had considerable amount of discussion on the GEMA contract, that's the Juneau Emergency Medical Group, on the their new contract. Also there, for the first time, the board had seen a proposal for a five-year capital project list. There was some discussion on that list, and it was sent back to the Finance Committee, the Hospital Finance Committee, for some more work and discussion on the list. Also, we heard reports on the continuing implementation of the new Meditech system, which is the electronic medical records system, which went live in November. There continue to be some parts of it are going very well. Some parts of it There are considerable glitches. They were talking about bringing in additional trainers to help with staff who are having some difficulty. So not doing it myself, it sounded very similar to any new technology system that gets adopted. There are always problems once you get into it, but they're hopeful that they will be able to overcome those. In addition, Dr. Sharon Fisher is the new chief of staff at the hospital and will be attending all future meetings. That's it.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I just had a quick question for Ms. Gladyszewski to make sure I understood that right. Did you say cats as in feline trail? Cats?
Cax. K-A-X as in many letters after that.
Cax. Oh, okay. All right. Sorry. I thought we were working on a trail for cats somewhere. So, sorry. All right. First off, Eagle Crest had their meeting on January 7th. The expenses and revenues are both down for this year, no surprise. Ticket sales are up significantly over last year, and passes are down. However, they did set record for daily ticket sales on 2 days, December 26th and the 27th, of which 10,000 and 14,000 respectively at the door, surpassing the 2007 record of $8,200 for 1 day. The total skier visits to date are 12,000. They've been open for 23 days. That was through the meeting on the 7th, which would be more days than last year already. They're hoping for a much longer season. Their next meeting is scheduled for February 4th at 5:30. The docks and harbors, this will be a little bit longer. There's because of, again, the volume of things that are going on, and I've edited it. Pile driving for 16B, pile driving continues. They are airlifting the sediment out of the pile driving spots, and they are installing rock anchors. The concrete pontoons are curing. The concrete is curing, and it will be floated in February and towed to Juneau in March. Regarding Douglas, the dredging is done, and the clean sand capping is going on both in the harbor and out in the channel where the dredged materials were placed. And the Phase 3 bid opening is February 2nd. That's for the headworks and things at the harbor. In Stater Harbor, the last 6-inch lift, of which there were six totals, was placed before Christmas, and then there's a 60-day waiting and settling period. On February 24th, a permanent retaining wall will be starting to go in place. The Central Council contracted with Jensen Lorba Yacht for permitting of what used to be the Thane Ore House. Central Council has a heritage or a cultural center that's going to be going in down there. Docks and Harbors is working on a land management plan for Norway Point to Bridge Park, all the land that they manage between those two places. The RFP is going out on January 26th. It's due. The lease with the Juneau Port Development has expired. They have a public meeting next Wednesday, the 13th, at 6 p.m., or this Wednesday, excuse me, at the Mendenhall Library, where they are going to roll out the final phase three of Stater Harbor for public comment. And they wanted me to express that they would like to schedule a joint meeting with the Assembly sometime in the future. And their next meeting is scheduled for Thursday, January 28th. Thank you.
When is the Stater Harbor meeting and where?
Wednesday at the Valley Library.
This coming Wednesday.
Wednesday, the 13th is Wednesday, right?
Okay, yeah. And right. The time, you know?
6 p.m.
6 p.m.
Thank you. Ms. White.
Thank you.
Ms. Don,
well, thank you. Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Okay, good. I unlocked it right this time. Let's see. The airport board will be meeting tomorrow night at 6 p.m. at the airport room at the airport, obviously at the airport, the Alaska room. I'll be calling into that meeting as well. Let's see. Few people mentioned I attended the JEDC meeting on January 6th and found that to be really interesting. Just a reminder to everyone that on January 20th from 5 o'clock to 6:30, we'll have the legislative welcome at Centennial Hall. January 21st, Juneau Convention and Visitors Bureau will be doing their meeting, 10 a.m., over at Louise Douglas Inn. So that's what I have for now.
Thank you, Ms. White. Did you, when did you say the airport board is meeting?
I'm sorry, tomorrow night at 6 p.m., Alaska Room at the airport. Oh, and then should I say something about our JCVB board member that you and I talked about earlier today?
No.
I'm not sure if that's appropriate.
I'm not sure what you're referring to, Ms. White. If you
Steve Hamilton.
Okay, we can. Oh, you mean how he's doing?
Yeah, I'm going to go visit Steve Hamilton tomorrow morning at Virginia Mason. So,
keep us informed, please.
I will.
Thank you, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I actually, under committee reports, neglected to give the committee of the whole report, which I'll just do very briefly. We heard an update on the HEARTS program, hiring, educating, and retaining, teaching, I'm going to get the last one wrong, staff teachers for early education teachers. So we heard that update from the Association for the Education of Young Children, and they gave us some updated numbers. We also heard an update on the Willoughby Arts Complex and identified a number of issues for the Assembly to follow up on and refine to bring back for some Assembly policy calls with regard to about the future of that proposed project. And we spent most of our time on the Utility Advisory Board's initial recommendation to the Assembly on what we do with our biosolids. I think it's fair to categorize this as having narrowed it down to two finalists. The Utility Advisory Board, I think that's fair. I'm getting a look. The Utility Advisory Board, I know, will meet January the 20th to do more analysis on those and bring us, hopefully, a further recommendation.
I'll do it under
okay. So then, just shifting to liaison reports, the campus council met today at UAS. It was the first day of the spring semester. The Chancellor Caulfield reported that they're down to three finalists for the provost job, and I didn't know enough about universities really to understand that the chancellor kind of is the one they put out front and has the big title. Who shakes everybody's hand, and then the provosts do the work. That may not be the fairest of categorizations, but it's an important job. The finalists, there's one finalist from Sitka, as well as one from California, and one from one of those A states down in the south. I can't remember which one. We also heard at the campus council and discussed a number of things that the university system is doing across the system to try and increase efficiencies as budget cuts come. One of those is that the academic calendar has been standardized now across all the campuses. So that should help with students who need to transfer around and professors who can teach classes at more than one university at a time through distance delivery. They are, of course, bracing for some of the budget impacts that they see coming and going through a number of cut scenarios. The school board has not met since our last meeting. They meet tomorrow evening. I believe they start with an executive session to work on the superintendent's evaluation sometime in the 4 or 4:30 range. I apologize for not having that. The regular meeting begins at 6 o'clock, so I'll be there.
Thank you. We have some opportunities. Wednesday, the students at Santa Kahini will be holding another one of their presentations. This time it's on the housing problems of Juneau. So that will be interesting to go to. That's from 2 to 3 at Santa Kahini. On the 15th, oh, no, there's another one, too, for young people. Also on Wednesday the 13th, Montessori students are coming here to the chambers from 10 to 11 to talk to anyone of the staff or the assembly who can be here to answer questions about government. So if you can come, that would be great. Friday, we'll at 10:30, the City Manager Search Committee will meet. The Alaska Committee will have its annual meeting this coming Saturday, the 16th, at 9 o'clock in the Alaska Room at the airport. I think Ms. Kiefer and I would agree that if we could get a penny for every certificate we've signed, we would probably have a lot of money in the bank. We have been signing certificates, but it's wonderful. And we've given service award certificates to the employees and our staff, and certificates to those people in the community, the businesses, that participate in the tourism best management practices. So that's really wonderful to do. It's great to be recognizing so many people that do so much for us, for the city. The one thing I would like to ask you, we are talking about dissolving the marijuana committee, and we think we didn't dissolve it. So there's some pros and cons. We may not need it anymore because maybe we're finished with our committee work. If that's one thing, we would have to find two people from the Planning Commission to join us because we lost our two people. But on the other side, I don't know if there are going to be any items that come up from the state that would require us meeting. However, we can meet in other committees and talk about whatever it is. It doesn't have to be in the marijuana committee. So the regulatory committee, we were talking about having, what's the word I want, Madam Attorney? Regulations. Deciding that we were going to be in charge of putting out business licenses, and we're going to talk about that and so forth for marijuana. Anyway, that issue has not been resolved. Does that make sense?
Okay. The local license proposal at the Planning Commission.
That's right. Yeah, right. Oh, it is. Okay. So what is your opinion? Do you want to dissolve this committee?
Yes.
Yeah.
How many would like to dissolve this committee? Say yes. Yes, yes. Raise your hand. Do something. Do you have a question, Jerry? Okay, Jerry has a question.
Madam Mayor, I have a question. I would like to hear the opinion of other people. I know you're on the committee, but other people that are on the committee
okay.
as well.
Well, Mr. Keel recommended it, so go ahead and speak.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. I would recommend that we do dissolve the Marijuana Policy Committee. The bulk of its work, I think, is done. We, as an assembly, have passed the zoning. We introduced tonight a small public safety piece, and the Planning Commission has in front of it the recommendation for a couple of conditional use provisions and a local license that the committee recommended. Because we don't know how much, if anything, the legislature will do with marijuana law this year, it doesn't seem particularly productive to me to bring two new planning commissioners up to speed. Mr. Watson and Satry, of course, have termed out. And I think that the assembly now has the capacity for any changes that might come down in the legislature to handle that through our regular committee process. And the other point was that the Marijuana Control Board has done the bulk of its regulations, and so we don't have any giant curveballs coming at us from that board, as far as I know.
I hope not.
So are you going to just make a motion that we dissolve?
Sure. So, Madam Mayor, based on that, I would move that we dissolve the Marijuana Policy Committee.
Is there objection to that? Poof. No. We are dissolved. Thank you,
Mr. Do you feel lighter now?
Yeah. I feel lighter. Ms. White, did you want to say something?
No, I don't have anything else to add other than now that I'll be on the aquatic board, I'll have to get some pool passes.
Okay.
So, excited about that. I love the new fee structure.
Okay. We're to assembly comments and questions. Mr. Jones.
A couple. We heard public testimony tonight on non-agenda items. My last conversation with the director of CDD regarding the potential of an independent review of some of those of the conditional use permit, he stated that he had met with the manager in law and that you'd talked about this and hinted that you had come up with some solution but never told me what the solution was. So is there going to be an independent look at what's going on there, or is it still an in-house review? And if so, when is that going to happen?
Yes, Madam Manager.
We are still determining who will do that review. It will be an independent review. It may be in-house, but somebody that doesn't deal with CDD directly but can still do the review. So we're finalizing who that will be at this point.
Okay, thank you. And then my other one, I think it was last March, maybe April, at one of the committee of the halls, Ms. Gladyszewski had made a motion to ask the lands department to reissue the bid package for the sale of the second and Franklin lot and to basically do similar to what they had done and to do that giving bidders more time. In October, I sent an email to the manager and to ask where we were at on that because no RFP had been issued. I had a phone conversation subsequently with the lands director, and he said that they were working with a real estate person here in town and looking at the issue of how they might do a long-term lease. That was not what the motion was. But in talking with Mr. Cheney, I thought, well, it will soon come back before us and we can have that discussion as an assembly. I sent him an email a couple of days ago asking where they were at. The response back was that they had just reviewed the last draft of a potential RFP for a long-term lease. For that lot, they expected to maybe have a final sometime in another month that would then go to the Department of Law for review, which means it could be a couple more months before maybe it would come back before the Lands Committee or somebody to decide if, in fact, the Assembly's wishes to have a similar RFP on the street is met by a new RFP for a new process called a long-term lease. Since I'm only one assembly member, I've gotten my answers to my questions, but I wanted to bring it before the assembly so that you all know where I think we're at. And if we want to wait through the process, we want to try to force the process quicker, whatever. I just wanted to make sure that all the assembly was aware that this is middle of January, been almost 10 months, and Lands is still working on a different RFP and a different process than what I think the motion was back in March. So I just wanted to raise that issue. I'm not complaining that I haven't gotten any responses back. It just seemed to me that at this point in time, the process that is being worked on by Lands was not what the Assembly had directed.
Thank you. Ms. Troll?
Well, thank you for enlightening us about that. I would like, hopefully we'll hear back from the city manager as to the status. But anyway, my report that I was going to give our Assemblyman comments We just had a proclamation today, this evening, dealing with being the mentoring month, and it made me question about if our honorary mayor system is going to be happening among the schools. Normally, we kind of have an honorary mayor around this time when we have a legislative reception coming up, and I think it was still a worthwhile mentoring program. So,
yes, we are. We've received one response, positive response back from one school, and we're still waiting to hear from the other two schools if they will have students. So our hope is to have a student for the legislative reception on the 20th.
Good. Thank you. And I have a question for Mr. Nankervis. You indicated that the docks and harbors were going to be doing the land management plan from the Norway Point to the Bridge Park. And we, as a committee of the whole at one time, considered looking at some of the land in the Bridge Park for potential housing options. And we were supposed to come back again before lands, and we've never have dealt with that concept. So I'm just curious as to if the Docks and Harbors Land Management Plan, if it's going to address that potential need or that potential opportunity to put some housing on the bridge side or not.
Mr. Nankervis?
It's Docks and Harbors land, but it's a different use.
It is. Hopefully I'm not mischaracterizing it, but what they're looking at is kind of like a master plan for how to work with what they've got there and utilize it to the best possible scenario. And along that end, I did speak with the port director regarding the housing stuff, and he's aware of that the assembly was looking at that. How that will be incorporated, I think, is going to depend on how it gets bid and how it all works out with other public meetings. So, but it did come up.
Okay.
So, thank you.
As something that may need to come back before the Lands Committee here soon. Lastly, I just want to acknowledge that I think it's great that we have three Juno artists that are going to be receiving a recognition from the governor. We have Vicky Soboloff, Nancy DeCherney, and Steve Hendrickson that are recent recipients of, or will be recipients of the governor's award for excellence in art. And that concludes my comments. Thank you.
Ms. Klocheski.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Just a question about the independent review. We had several testifiers today that seemed to be suggesting a big review of CDD. And my understanding is it's just about a particular, basically, dispute about a particular conditional use permit. So I just want to make that's correct, right?
Correct.
Madam Manager. Okay.
Correct.
That's all.
Ms. Green?
Nothing this evening. Thank you.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. Two things real briefly. One for our lawyer. Ken Kelch got up during public comments and brought up a question I hadn't thought of before. So I'm going to try and phrase this question as best I can based on what he was saying. So did we get sideways of anything by making the decision for a special election prior to appointing somebody to the District 1 seat?
No.
Okay. That was easy. Fast answer. Thank you. That meant I was a good question, right? Okay. And the second thing I would like, the indulgence of the whole assembly, this came up at the Lands Committee meeting, but I had asked to name a street after Carl Reiches, who was a police officer in this town that died a line of duty death in 1992, and specifically I was addressing Mr. Cheney regarding the Renninger subdivision in that street that they called Jackie Street, and he wisely suggested that maybe I ought to look at the new development going in at Peterson Hill. And I thought that was a good idea, and there wasn't really any objection, at least that I saw, at the Lands Committee, and if there isn't any objection from this body, that I have that conversation with the family and then have that with Mr. Cheney for the platting of that subdivision, I'd like to do that. Thank you. That was it for me. Those are two quick ones. Thank you.
Yeah. Ms. White, any comments or questions?
Nope, not at this time. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Keel?
Nothing this evening. Thank you, Madam Mayor.
Okay. Continuation of public participation on non-agenda items. Is there anyone in the public who would like to address the assembly? Okay. Public participation is closed. We do not have an executive session.
Madam Mayor, before, I just want to remind everybody, 7:30 tomorrow morning here for the breakfast, and then public hearing will be at 9 o'clock for the ordinance. And then also before the legislative reception, that starts at 5 o'clock, and at 4 o'clock there will be the dedication of the Zacorn Youth Center kitchen. We weren't able to recognize those people at the assembly meeting that donated time and money to that, so that will be happening at 4 o'clock prior to the legislative reception. So I just wanted to remind you of those two things. Okay. I also want to apologize that you didn't have correct information in your pack tonight. We'll make sure we will work on our double checks before we put the packets together.
Glad you remind us of that. Without any other business, we are adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.